Let's imagine a scene in a cafeteria where there's a self-serve coffee bar. Linda's getting herself some coffee, and a stranger walks up behind her.
Hey, would you mind giving me a refill of some of that, too?
No, give me your cup.
Thanks, honey. I hope I can return the favor sometime.
Thanks, but don't call me honey.
How do you suppose Linda's feeling right now? She's clearly irritated by the honey remark. Now, suppose that a mutual friend of our two characters happened to be in the cafeteria and formally introduced them to each other. Do you think Linda would have been able to engage in a conversation with our man at the coffee urn? Would she be able to listen to him actively with full concentration and acknowledgement and respond to him well? If she chose to, Linda would be able to listen actively by following the guidelines in this segment of the program. Now we're working on E of the caress model, emotional control. Have you ever been listening to someone and then for some reason you were turned off by what they were saying? The other person may have been your spouse, your boss, or someone you just met at the self-serve coffee bar. But suddenly, you found yourself irritated or uncomfortable, or just tuned out for no apparent reason. You unexpectedly became a non-listener. What really happened? The other person probably said something, or made some body language gesture, or conveyed an underlying emotion that you didn't like. Emotional reactions can obviously have a major impact on your ability to listen. You may have come far in your practice of active listening after working on concentrating, acknowledging, researching, and responding. But get into a conversation with someone who uses a word you don't like, or who comes across as arrogant, or who has a strong opinion you don't share, and bingo, your active listening skills can go right out the window. Throughout our life, the process of socialization and maturation creates a kind of filtering system in our brains. Everything that enters through our senses gets filtered before we're conscious of it. These filters are based on our attitudes, beliefs, values, prejudices, our feeling patterns, and our self-image. Because these filters are within us, we're often blind to them. But they're firmly in place, and they affect everything we perceive. People, experiences, the news, everything. Exercising emotional control means being aware of your filters, your hot buttons, as some people call them. And it means being able, if you choose, to control your reactions. I'm going to give you a formula for emotional control. It's EC equals R1 plus R2 plus R3. EC stands for emotional control. And it's the sum total of being able to recognize, redirect, and resolve your emotions. During the course of this segment on emotional control, we'll be listening to two ongoing vignettes that illustrate the three-step process of recognizing, redirecting, and resolving. And we'll stop at points along the way to discuss what's going on. Let's listen to the first vignette now. Roger is vice president of manufacturing at a big precision instruments company. Julio is the leader of a special R&D team which is developing a new laser drill. Julio speaks first.
We had a breakthrough in the design of the laser drill 2 days ago. Now we should be able to make, if not beat, our development timeline. But we need another piece of equipment to help us out.
More equipment? That means more money. You guys have already gone over budget and you're not done yet?
Look, there's no way you can budget for something like this in advance and know all it's going to take. We're not spending money wildly. We want to beat LaserTech. Everybody knows the first company to market wins the lion's share of customers for this drill.
Yeah, but what's it costing us? I want you to meet the deadline without spending more money.
If you had that new caliper you and I saw at the electronics show last month, we'd be on our way to the finish line.
That thing costs $5,000 to $7,000. No way we're going to waste more money on this project.
Roger and Julio will be continued, but I want you to notice what's happened so far. Perhaps this is a typical R&D stalemate. The design team needs more money. The vice president says, no way. But Julio could have taken offense at a word Roger used right near the end. Roger said, no way we're going to waste more money. That was a nasty comment, and it could have turned Julio off. Now let's listen to our second vignette. This one between two women, Diane and Cindy, who are in a women's group that meets monthly. Diane speaks first.
It's happened so many times that I'm thinking of leaving the group.
You're really considering leaving the group?
Well, I'm close to it. I just don't want to be criticized all the time. I want to be able to talk about what's going on in my relationship with Jeff and not feel like I'm being judged.
Diane, I don't have the impression that anybody's criticizing you or judging your relationship with Jeff. I think we all realize how hard you're trying to make it work.
Yeah, and offering advice all the time on how I shouldn't take his verbal abuse and stand up for myself and be assertive and all that.
When that subject comes up, I think the rest of us are trying to be supportive of what you're saying. You talk about wanting to be able to stick up for yourself, so we're trying to stand behind you.
Easy for you to say. You're married to that wimp George who's afraid to say a word to you for fear you'll leave him.
Where's this conversation going? It might go down the drain if Cindy reacts to Diane's comment about George. Let's suppose that both Julio and Cindy want to continue the dialogues they're involved in. They want to exercise emotional control, even though they've each been verbally punched. So what do? Before they react, they take step one in our emotional control formula. They recognize that they're having an emotional reaction. What causes an emotional reaction when you're listening to someone? This may surprise you, but the single most important factor affecting interpersonal communication is the self-concept of each person. People's beliefs about themselves are always the determining factor in their communication behavior. The self is the star in every act of communication, including listening. When your dearly held beliefs or values conflict with the speaker's dearly held beliefs, strong emotional reactions can occur. In the first vignette, the vice president has clearly insinuated that Julio and his design team are wasting the company's money. Julio probably has a self-image that he's an exemplary employee. After all, he is the leader of a very important design team. The company has put its faith in him. The implication that he's wasting the company's money when he thinks he's done everything in his power to watch the budget could really set him off. What about Cindy? She's trying to be a good friend to Diane by talking her out of leaving the women's group. And what does she get for her efforts? The comment that she's married to a wimp who won't stand up for himself. Again, a blow to Cindy's self-image that could cause an emotional reaction on her part. What happens when something triggers an emotional reaction within us? First, there are physical manifestations that we may or may not be aware of. Here are some of the more common ones. An increase in the heart rate and breathing rate, a facial flush, a shaky voice, a strong desire to interrupt or raise your voice. You might lose your train of thought. You might also feel your muscles tense, your throat constrict, or your hands clench into fists. There are many other possibilities depending on how you react to emotional stress. Your stomach may tighten, or you may feel yourself on the verge of tears. It's a good idea to become familiar with how your body responds to an emotional reaction. It's one of the ways you can recognize and admit that a strong emotional reaction is brewing. Let's play a little game. It's called Push My Buttons. We'll hear a wide variety of statements. Imagine that the person you hear is speaking directly to you. Some of the statements might be very offensive to you, and I apologize in advance. This is just a little test to see where your buttons get pushed. Here we go.
Can't you do anything right? Do I have to follow you around to make sure you know what you're doing? How old are you?
Well, we just don't give replacements to everybody who walks in here. How do I know you're not lying to me?
I'm so tired of waiting around. Aren't you ready yet?
I don't take that junk from anybody, especially you.
Well, I think the whole federal government's a bunch of crooks and should be run out of town.
Well, you know where she's from. She can't help it. We'll have to make allowances for her background.
Classical music has nothing to offer. I like rap music best.
Well, how'd you do? Did we push any buttons for you? The first comment we heard comes under the category of scolding parent type. It may not have bothered you, but if you grew up with a scolding parent, anyone else who has that style is going to set you off. What about being called a liar or any implication that questions your integrity? How about demeaning remarks that are an attempt to put you down? Can you listen actively to someone who's criticizing your favorite political candidate or taking a stand 180 degrees different from your own? What's your reaction when someone uses a racial or ethnic slur or tells an off-color joke? What about someone who adores a type of music you just can't stand? Remarks that make you feel defensive about your integrity, your ideas, or who you associate with can set off an immediate reaction. Then there are loaded words which indirectly challenge your values, what you stand for, or what you believe in. Whenever a speaker uses ethnic or racial or sexist or religious slurs, it's almost certain to cause an emotional reaction on the part of the listener. By now, you'd think people would stay away from these verbal taboos, but unfortunately, this isn't the case. There are other things that can cause an emotional overreaction in the listener that don't have to do with the words used. The speaker can have certain dress habits or speech patterns or other idiosyncrasies that might be a turnoff. For example, if you're dressed too casually when you go in to apply for a bank loan, no matter what you say about your ability to pay, the loan officer might be negatively influenced by your appearance. On the other hand, if you have an appointment in a small rural town and you're wearing an expensive suit, you might be seen as a city slicker and trigger a level of distrust in the other person. Earlier, we talked about how an ethnic or regional accent can cause an emotional reaction. People sometimes hold stereotypes about individuals from different parts of the country. In addition, a person's body language, use of grammar or vocabulary, or even hairstyle can set up a barrier in the listener's mind that prevents active listening. Let's take a few seconds now to sift through your emotional filing cabinets. Think about words or phrases that would produce a negative reaction in you. How'd you do? Was it easy to come up with words that would turn you off in a conversation? Or do you hold an attitude that I can listen to anything and not be flustered by it? Is there a particular regional accent that would cause you to not take what a person says seriously? Is there a particular joke or reference to an ethnic group that would set you off? Is there a personality style that you know pushes your buttons? Is there a controversial topic, maybe abortion or gun control or violence on TV or gay rights, that you have strong opinions about? If so, what would happen if you met someone with a very strong belief opposite your own? So far, we've been focusing on the more obvious ways that a speaker can turn you off as a listener, through loaded words, strong opinions, or his or her personality style. But that turnoff can happen in much more subtle ways that are harder to detect. In the early 1960s, psychiatrist Eric Byrne wrote a very popular book called Games People Play. In it, he described about 35 so-called games that people play in social arenas. You might not be able to label the cause, but conversations with certain people can leave you feeling annoyed for some reason. And it could be because you're an unwilling participant in a game designed by the speaker. One such game is the ever-popular I'm More Than You, which leaves you feeling less intelligent, less sophisticated, less clever, or less something than the speaker. Another popular game puts the listener into the role of rescuer because the speaker plays victim very well. A victim can spot a rescuer a mile away and knows how to play to the rescuer's sympathies. And I'll mention just one more game. It's the old power game where you go into a conversation thinking the two of you are colleagues or equals. At the end of it, you're left feeling as though the other person has much more control in the situation and you're in a subordinate position. Again, you can tell from the descriptions of those games how the concept of self-image plays such a central role in conversations. If you feel the speaker is acting in a way that puts you down, or turns you into a rescuer, or into a subordinate, it affects your self-image. and that can cause you to have an emotional reaction and shut down your ability to be an active listener. There's another kind of emotional trigger that's worth mentioning. It's when the speaker triggers positive emotions for you, and sometimes they can hinder the listening process. Yes, a positive emotional reaction can also get in the way, because you tend to relax your listening effort and bask in the positive feeling. A couple of examples. One, the doctor walks in and says the biopsy test turned out negative. Great news! But the doctor wants you to go on a specific regimen of diet and medications to take care of some other problem they did find. If the doctor tries to tell you the specifics of the regimen after the good news, good luck. He'll probably be talking to the wall. Here's another more mundane example. A client you've been trying to land for months finally says yes to a big purchase of your company's computer products. But she has a list of conditions about service and delivery of those products that are key to the whole deal. You, as the listener, might be so pleased, so engrossed in a vision of telling your supervisor about the deal, that you miss the client's entire list of conditions. You mumble your agreement to her conditions, and 10 minutes later, you have no idea what you've committed your company to. This is a key point. What the speaker says can trigger your emotions negatively or positively. Either way, there's a danger of losing track of the conversation. So, step one in emotional control is this. Recognize that you're having an emotional reaction to the speaker. Only then can you begin to address it, which is step two. Step two in emotional control is to redirect. Once you recognize a strong emotional reaction brewing, you can then redirect that negative energy. Let's go back and pick up the conversation between Roger, the vice president of manufacturing, and Julio, the leader of the R&D team designing a new laser drill.
If we had that new caliper you and I saw at the electronics show last month, we'd be on our way to the finish line.
That thing costs $5,000 to $7,000. No way we're going to waste more money on this project.
Waste more money? Well, you seem to have a concern about the budget that we haven't discussed. What are you saying, Roger?
I'm saying that we've got a mandate to stay within budget so we can be in the black with this new drill 2 years after it's out.
Okay. I understand what you're saying, and I think I've made every effort to stay within budget. Take a look at the expenditures. There's no fat. We both want this project to succeed, to make us look good, right? Now, I'm trying to understand how $7,000 more is going to look bad in a total budget of over $250,000.
That new electronic caliper can't do anything more than the stuff we have in our own R&D workshop can do.
Right, but it can do it faster.
Julio could have gone off in a huff after Roger's remark about wasting money. Or he could have engaged in an argument with Roger over the budget and how the money's being spent. He didn't do either. He redirected his feelings back into the topic at hand, getting more money for a special tool. Now let's find out what happens after Diane makes that remark about Cindy's husband, George.
You talk about wanting to be able to stick up for yourself, so we're trying to stand behind you.
Easy for you to say. You're married to that wimp, George, who's afraid to say a word to you for fear you'll leave him.
Now wait just a minute. I appreciate how you feel, that the group is pushing you too hard on what you should do with Jeff. It's easy for us to sit back and coach you on how to be assertive. I know I'm not always that way with George. He says things that make me feel like a subordinate on how things should be done. I think it's his old Cub Scout training.
Well, maybe I just feel like the group is asking me to represent all feminists when I'm arguing with Jeff. I feel like if I ever give in to him, I'll be letting everyone down.
Good for Cindy. She was able to take a low blow from Diane without triggering an emotional reaction that would have derailed the entire conversation. Instead, Cindy tried to reflect back Diane's feelings and show Diane that she felt empathy with her by mentioning George. Notice that in Cindy's statement, she gave Diane feeling feedback when she said, I appreciate how you feel that the group is pushing you too hard. Then Cindy used an example from her own life. A situation with George which just happened to contradict the image of Wimp. And she was able to finish with a joke, which is a great way to diffuse tension. So both Julio and Cindy faced remarks that could have ended their respective conversations, and they were each able to redirect their feelings and continue speaking and actively listening to the other person. Let's consider how each of them redirected their urge to overreact emotionally. First, we have to assume that they took step one. They recognized and were aware of their reaction. They were conscious of the fact that a challenging statement had been made and that they were feeling some anger. Did you notice that both Julio and Cindy took a deep breath and paused before beginning their responses? That's a key technique. In this section on acknowledging, we discovered that just taking a deep breath prohibits you from jumping in and interrupting a speaker. You can't speak when you're taking a deep breath. And a deep breath actually does more than that. It calms you down in a very physical way. Breathing brings your attention back to center stage and away from whatever irritated you. If you're becoming anxious or annoyed by a remark that's emotionally charged, deep breathing will help calm you down. If something the person said is really bothering you, shifting your focus to your breathing for a few seconds and watching your breath go in and out, a sort of mini meditation exercise, will do wonders for your emotional control. Do you know what happens in our bodies when we start to feel angry, or tears well up in our eyes, or we feel nervous and our voice goes up an octave? One of the most dramatic things happening physically is that we start to breathe higher up in our chest. Check it out the next time you're feeling strong emotions. You're breathing from your upper chest, not from your diaphragm. It's a tip professional speakers use when they're beginning to feel butterflies. They know to lower the center of their breathing, making sure their stomach is rising and falling with each breath, not just their upper chest. In terms of emotional control, deep breathing helps, but it may not be enough. You may find it necessary to really stop and change your focus for a few seconds. You could think back to a time when you were really feeling great, when your self-image was not in question. Julio could have flashed back to an image of his laser drill team and how supportive they were of him. Cindy might have flashed back to a time when she was really feeling great in the women's group. Or they each could have chosen a mental picture such as a favorite pastime or vacation spot, something to get them back into a positive frame of mind. Using that mental imagery will translate physically into a calming effect. So, you've decided to override a knee-jerk emotional reaction. Then what? The next words out of your mouth are crucial. Julio decided to tackle the problem head-on by using the offending words, wasting more money, and then calmly asking Roger what he meant by that. Cindy decided to let the remark about George being a wimp drop. She didn't address it head-on, but she did manage to offer a counter-image of George. What each of them did was to refocus on what they had in common with the other person in the dialogue. They each managed to break out of a me versus you mentality and look for bridges instead. Julio shared a common goal with Roger. They both want that new laser drill to be the first one of its kind on the market. Cindy had a goal in her conversation with Diane. She wanted Diane to remain a member of the women's group. For Julio and Cindy, their goals were more important than getting entangled in an emotional skirmish that was off the track. They were also able to express empathy for the other person's position. Julio reaffirmed Roger's need to stay on budget. Cindy was able to show empathy through citing a situation in her own life similar to Diane's. Remember that empathy is being able to understand and feel what the other person is feeling and to see the situation from their point of view. Chances are the other person made a negative remark because they're feeling some negative emotion themselves. That was true of both Roger and Diane in our scenarios. Rather than reacting to the remark, you can demonstrate your understanding of the emotions that motivated it. You can use the opportunity to validate and empathize with some aspect of their feelings. Comments like, "I appreciate how you feel," and "I understand your feelings," let the other person know that you're sincerely trying to understand what's being said. Remarks that indicate empathy also demonstrate that you're ready to problem solve rather than take some rigid position. Either Julio or Cindy could have reacted to the offensive remark with something like, "That's not the way I see it," or, "You're absolutely wrong." Instead, their next remark indicated a willingness to carry on the dialogue. Let's listen to a couple more examples of this point.
"You know, even with the extra staff person, we're still struggling to meet the deadline."
"Struggling? Are you guys lazy or what?"
What could be the first man's response to that? I'm sure you can think of some negative, knee-jerk responses. How about this one?
"No, we're not lazy. We're motivated. Well, how about helping us out?"
That short response covered a lot of ground. It acknowledged the second man's negative comment and turned it around, making the struggling reference a positive. It assumed a common goal between the two men. They both wanted the deadline met, and it avoided what could have been a very nasty emotional skirmish. His response indicated he wasn't about to be dragged into a stupid argument. He wanted to problem solve. "Let's get the job done," was the implication of, "How about helping us out?" Here's another one.
"My checkbook's way off this month. Not in my favor. I must have forgot to enter something or other."
"Yeah, maybe balancing your checkbook is one of those adult responsibilities you're not ready for yet."
Now, what's the younger woman going to say? Let's assume she's in her 20s and considers herself an adult.
"Okay, Mom, after I check my bank statement and find the problem, you can buy me ice cream."
That's another short statement that covers a lot of ground. First, the younger woman decides to use humor to diffuse the issue. Assuming the other woman is not her mother, we can hear that she decided to face the negative comment head on. "If you call me a child, you can be my mom." Then she stated how she would problem solve the situation by simply going through the bank statement to find the discrepancy, an adult thing to do. Her response indicated she did not want to be dragged into a stupid argument over whether she was an adult capable of handling a bank account. After indicating that she knew how to solve the problem, the younger woman again made a joke about the childlike image created by the other woman by saying, "You can buy me an ice cream." In both of these short examples, we heard what could have been the beginning of an emotional exchange being turned into an opportunity for discussion. I never said that emotional control was easy. It takes a real effort on your part. But by achieving this particular aspect of active listening, you'll avoid a lot of useless confrontations, and you'll be known as a sharp cookie who doesn't crumble under pressure.